Hopefully these words will sound familiar. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. For attaining wisdom and discipline, for understanding words of insight, for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life, doing what is right and just and fair, for giving prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. Let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance. For understanding proverbs and parables, the sayings and riddles of the wise. And verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. Well, today we continue with Solomon's handbook of wisdom, the Proverbs. And as a reminder, the intent here is not to work through the book verse by verse. Rather, my objective here is simply to encourage everyone to develop a habit of reading the Proverbs, maybe something like a chapter a day, enjoy them, think about them, contemplate the advice that is given, the guidance, the warnings, and then, of course, apply the wisdom that they do provide. I think it's a fun book to read. I enjoy it quite a bit and would like for you to, if you haven't already, been in the habit of reading it or have appreciated it, that you would do so. Last week, we spent our time on Proverbs 14:10, which served as a good example of just how helpful a proverb's wisdom can be to life's situations. And it also served as a good working example of how proverbs are to be read and understood. For instance, the advice given is not always stated directly. It's oftentimes just implied. Solomon simply offers up an observation about life in general or something specific. And then we are to reflect on that observation and, you know, something along the line of, that's something to think about, and then connect the dots ourselves. Each heart knows its own bitterness, and no one else can fully share in its joy. And so don't assume, obviously, that you know how a person truly feels. You can get into trouble, for instance, if you pretend to do so when trying to comfort someone who is suffering. And this proverb is also a good example of how the wisdom contained in it can be applied on multiple levels. There is guidance here not only for the one attempting to offer comfort, but also for those receiving comfort. In times of grief, be sure your expectations of others are reasonable. Typically, when we read the Proverbs, we tend to breeze through them rather quickly. We don't really take the time and effort to go beyond the surface, and so we should be encouraged to contemplate all the implied advice, guidance, and warnings, and consider all the various ways that that advice, guidance, and warnings can be applied. So last week, we spent quite a bit of time on that one. Today, instead of focusing on one proverb like we did last week, I want to continue on with some general guidelines, helpful tips on how to approach, interpret, understand these short sayings. I've got 10 on my list. I covered the first three when we started this series a little over a month ago, so we'll start with just a quick review of those, and then we'll move into the other seven. Hopefully these first three will sound familiar. Proverbs are truisms. All things being equal, apply this, and this will more than likely be the result. The intent is to provide practical advice, and that's it. We're going to get into trouble if we try to do too much with it. We run into problems if we try to treat them, for instance, like commands or promises or even doctrine. And we'll talk more about that here later this morning. But truisms simply state the obvious, or what should be obvious. For instance, this one here, he who guards his mouth and tongue keeps himself from calamity. Common sense, good advice. How many times have we gotten into trouble because we didn't know when to shut up? Anybody? Okay, for sure. You know, all things being equal, do this and expect that. It's cause and effect, and that's what truisms are. It's all about cause and effect. Number two, by design, proverbs are brief, therefore they're going to be inexact. No proverb is a complete statement of truth. They're sort of like abbreviations. Wisdom is compressed into a short saying, and the briefer a statement is, the less likely it is to be precise. It is not their purpose to provide all of these qualifiers and conditions and exceptions and so on. They do not state everything about a particular truth or principle, but they do point to it. And here's a good example in chapter 15. The Lord is far from the wicked, but he hears the prayer of the righteous. Okay, you don't run too far with this. You know, we get the point, even though there's quite a bit here that is left unsaid. God hears the prayer, but we're not told whether he will answer the prayer or whether he will answer the prayer favorably or who exactly are the righteous. And does the Lord answer a prayer based on a person's righteousness and so on? But all this goes well beyond the scope of what the proverb is intended for. All right, number three. Proverbs are not to be understood too literally. Look beyond the surface to the actual advice or wisdom that the proverb points to. We've been talking about that quite a bit, actually, because oftentimes the guidance or the warning is implied. And I think we used this as an illustration earlier. If anyone, from chapter 27, if anyone loudly blesses their neighbor early in the morning, it will be taken as a curse. Okay, it's not just about how to or not to greet someone in the early morning hours. The lesson is much broader than that. Solomon paints a very striking picture of something everybody can immediately relate to. And this picture then vividly illustrates the wisdom of good timing in anything. But it's all about good timing. And we would miss much of the point here if we thought that this is just about waking people up in the morning. Though that is certainly one application of it. All right, so with those, with that quick review behind us, let's move on now to the next one, number four. Proverbs are designed to help you remember the advice. That's part of their uniqueness here. They are short, they are catchy, many are structured as a parallelism, and a good number of them use comparisons that we can relate to, and there's often rhythm. Even though, unfortunately, a lot of that rhythm has been lost in the translation, but sometimes you can still pick it up. But all these things help them to stick. They help them to stick with us. Another way we remember Proverbs is by the striking images that are used, a way of imprinting them on our minds. Here's one that I know you all remember. Even if you only read the book of Proverbs once, this one would have stood out. Like a gold ring in a pig's snout is a beautiful woman who shows no discretion. That picture is formed in your right away, and it sticks with you. You read it, and you just never forget it. One of my favorites is this one from chapter 26. Like one who seizes a dog by the ears is a passerby who meddles in a quarrel not his own. Again, the imagery is quite vivid. The point is pretty obvious here. And this one always comes to mind whenever I'm asked to mediate between a husband and a wife who are going at it. You know, I'm going to get bit before this whole thing is over. All right. Even in my own marriage, I know I'm going to get bit before it's all over. All right. That was not in my notes. Or how about this one in verse 18? Like a maniac shooting flaming arrows of death is a man who deceives his neighbor and says, I was only joking. It's a good warning about not being what? Not being reckless. Okay, reckless with our motives and intentions and reckless in not owning up when we're caught. And one more. This is just too good to pass up. There's a lot of them I really wanted to include, but I like this one as well. Like a bad tooth or a lame foot is reliance on the unfaithful in times of trouble. Very descriptive way to illustrate the angst you're going to feel when you have to depend on someone who is undependable. All right, another memory device under the same point here that we find in the Proverbs is the arranging of points in a numerical order. For instance, this one. There are six things the Lord hates, seven that are detestable to him. How many remember that saying in the Proverb? Right now, how many remember what the seven are? Okay. We may not always be able to recall what those seven are, but we do remember that there are seven. But that itself is quite valuable. And another factor is actually the unique unique way that this is worded. You know, it kind of catches our attention. Again, it sticks with us. You know, six things the Lord hates. Seven that are detestable to him. How many can recall any of the seven? Who wants to take a shot at a couple of them, or one or two? Okay. Yep. I'll just read them here for you. Haughty eyes, I think someone said, lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, heart that devises wicked schemes, feet that are quick to rush into evil, a false witness who pours out lies, and a man who stirs up dissension among brothers, which goes with the psalm we read earlier today. All right, and then also under this point, number four, Proverbs 31, 10 through 31, about the noble wife, they're at the end of the book, implements actually several memory devices. First, it is an acrostic poem. We lose that in our modern-day translations, but every verse begins with the successive letter of the Hebrew alphabet. And secondly, incorporates numerous images. We probably all can recall the line, "She is like merchant ships bringing her food from afar." That kind of sticks with us. And thirdly, there is hyperbole, which helps with the memory as well. And there's actually quite a bit of hyperbole in that. And this is, of course, something that Jesus used a lot of for the purpose of making a point stand out. And when it stands out, it sticks with us. This whole idea of exaggeration. The passage describes a life actually that is practically impossible for any woman to fulfill. And so all of these, the acrostic arrangement, the various images, and the over-the-top expectations of that, that all kind of helps us to remember it. All right, moving on to the next principle, number five. And this one goes without saying, so we're not going to take a lot of time on it. Though there are not a lot, we do find some references to cultural customs and ancient practices. And like any other, whenever we find that in the Bible, you know, we have to kind of take note of it. And many of these are, of course, not observed in modern day times here in America. And so, again, we just need to check them out. And this is actually quite easy to do. You don't have to spend the whole day at Concordia, the Library Concordia Seminary. You know, most of us have these tools even in our own homes. And a good study Bible would offer good necessary information on this. One example would be there in that section on about the noble wife, verse 23, her husband is respected at the city gate. If you don't know what the city gate is all about, the point was going to be pretty much lost. And so, for instance, in the notes of my NIV Zondervan Study Bible, it says this: the city gate is the center for civic and commercial activity. The wife's management of the household mirrors her husband's management of the community. So everyone should have a good study Bible. It's a good time to make this little promo now. You know, there are a number of good ones on the market today. I highly encourage you to pick one up if you don't have one already, or add it to your Christmas list. You have the ESV Study Bible, the NIV Study Bible, the Zondervan Study Bible. There are three that are really good. There are others that are helpful as well. All right, number six. I kind of had a hard time coming up with a way to say this one, but hopefully you get the idea. Look for the larger application. You kind of have to think beyond the nouns or the actual illustration or example that is given. And a good example of this would be all the warnings about being seduced by an adulterous woman. The adulterous woman simply represents anything that would entice a man to sin sexually. Notice this from chapter 5. For the lips of an adulteress drips honey, and her speech is smoother than oil, but in the end she is bitter as gall, sharp as a double-edged sword. Well, that could just as easily, of course, apply to something like pornography. Or for that matter, refer to something we discussed earlier regarding application on multiple levels. It could, you know, let us not think that the warnings about sexual temptation are limited to men. The proverb equally applies to women being seduced by the smooth talk of a man, married or unmarried. So, another example, important one to bring up here, is the rod of discipline that is referred to in a number of proverbs, like this one here in chapter 22. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him. Well, the intent is simply to assert that discipline is necessary in the raising of a child, not that such discipline has to involve a literal rod, or for that matter, has to always be corporal, as in spanking. In both of these, and there are many other examples we could use, what we have here is something called a synecdoche. This is a figure of speech in which a part is used for the whole. In other words, a particular item represents all that goes with it, similar to the way that we might use the word bread to refer to a whole meal, or wheels when we refer to a car. And so rod simply represents discipline in any of its various forms, including corporal. And adulteress represents anyone or anything that would entice another person, male or female, to sin sexually. And so again, when reading through the Proverbs, you know, we kind of have to look for the larger application, go just beyond the particular example that is given, whatever that subject might be. Make sense so far, everybody? All right, good. Number 7, moving right along. You're going to get out early today. I want to hear my first amen during the sermon.
Amen.
Amen. You're getting out early today. All right, good. Because if you had not said amen then, I would make sure that we would not get out early. Proverbs are not divine. They're not commandments. We've talked about this, but we just need to make this a separate point and punch it. It is quite common to confuse the heeding of good advice with the obeying of divine commands. And we got to be sure that we don't do that. And this has already come up a little bit earlier. This one here in chapter 22 is probably the best example of how the advice of a proverb has in recent Christian tradition been turned into a commandment. From chapter 22, do not be a man who strikes hands in a pledge or puts up security for debts. Okay, in virtually all Christian circles, it is taught that because of this verse and others like it in the Proverbs, co-signing on a loan, for instance, is a sin. But it is not a sin. It is just a really, really, really dumb thing to do. Okay, I mean, really dumb. But it's not a sin. This is a warning. It's not a command. In fact, it is a warning found a number of times, as I mentioned, in the Proverbs. Here is a list of the other ones. It's such a dumb thing to do that it's included numerous times throughout the book. Now, if we were to look up all these verses, we would see that anyone who does this sort of thing lacks good judgment, that suffering will be inevitable, that you could very well lose your own bed, and that if you have done this, that you should immediately go humble yourself and do everything you can possibly do to get out of that agreement, and so on. When you put up security or cosign, you are at the mercy of the other person. And if the other guy doesn't make his payments, the bank will come after you. And indeed, they can seize your accounts, garnish your wages, even get a lien on your home, lose your bed. And the more you cosign for, the more you are at the mercy of the other person. And so what we're given here is wise, sound, godly advice for our own good. But that's it. It is not absolutely forbidden. In fact, there may be times under certain circumstances when it might be not only acceptable, but even a good thing to do. As in, who can give me an example? As in co-signing for who?
For a stranger.
No. Somebody else said it. Yeah, right. It isn't co-signing for perhaps something like your child's first car, for instance. You know, the problem with putting up security or co-signing is that sort of thing is that you have all the responsibility and none of the authority. But that would not be the case in a child-parent relationship, but hopefully. You know, in helping your 19-year-old establish credit and get a car so that he or she can get a job or go to college or whatever could very well be a prudent thing to do. Now, we can look at other examples of this, but I think you pretty well get the point. Essentially, the genre of Proverbs is wisdom, not law. We're going to get into problems if we try to, you know, force something that was never intended. All right, the next one is very similar. We've talked about this one as well. Proverbs are not promises. They are not to be understood as legal guarantees from God. All things being equal, do this, and this will more than likely be the result. That's what's going on. Many of these proverbs simply propose expected effects and results from following the advice given. This one here in chapter 22 is a prime example of how a cause and effect statement has traditionally been turned into a divine promise. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is older, he will not turn from it. All right, this is often, I hope I don't upset anybody, but this is often used to comfort parents whose son or daughter has turned away from the faith, prodigals. or is rebelling against the parents, or is pushing their parents away, or any number of things like that. You know, the parents are troubled, they're worried, they're fearful, and so Proverbs 22:6 comes to the rescue. Well, if there is such a promise that a child will eventually get turned around, it is not this verse. It is not meant to be a hard guarantee from God. This verse is an exhortation to parents to be faithful and diligent. Raise your kid right, and all things being equal, the result will be favorable. And more importantly, the advice here is if you don't raise your child right, the result will be unfavorable. Now, indeed, many of the Proverbs like this one, they do sound like a promise. And to a large degree, this is how we've been conditioned, really, quite frankly, how we've been conditioned over the years with all the Bible promises books that they publish and all that stuff. It just kind of conditions us to think that way. But again, we have to think of cause and effect. We would not, for instance, think this one, another proverb, is a promise, even though it could actually sound like it. Proverbs 23, do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish him with a rod, he will not die. We wouldn't think that's a promise. I mean, I remember turning on the news a number of years ago where somebody actually beat their kid to death in discipline, and he was quoting this verse, and he was all disappointed that God did not guarantee sparing the child from death. Well, we all know that this isn't what this proverb is referring to. What is this proverb saying? It wouldn't hurt that kid of yours to spank him once in a while. It's not going to kill him, you know? I mean, that's what's being said there, right? Right? All right. So if you need to say that to somebody today on your way out, feel free. It's not going to hurt that kid of yours to get spanked once in a while. If you have a list of kids for me to read next Sunday, I'll do that. All right. Let's move on. I'm going to get into trouble for sure. Here's another one. You know, this is the Lord's curse is on the house of the wicked, but he blesses the home of the righteous. This would be a handy little verse to use when as a promise, but it's not, because how would this, as a divine promise, apply to First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs, Texas? How would you make that a promise? So again, Proverbs, it is a collection of wise sayings. It's not a collection of promises. All right, number 9, some Proverbs simply state observations, and the wisdom is found in realizing how things work in a fallen world. There is no direct commentary on the rightness or wrongness of what is observed. It is assumed, of course, that the reader will see it. And here are 3. Illustrate this pretty well. The poor are shunned even by their neighbors, but the rich have many friends. It's an observation. We live in things are quite frankly kind of crappy the way things work, and this represents that. Chapter 19, many curry favor with the ruler, and everyone is the friend of the man who gives gifts. It's an observation. And from chapter 22, the rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. These are facts of life kinds of things, you know. If in a particular situation you feel as though you have been treated unfairly, realize that you are probably not alone in that. It's, you know, this world is an unfair place. And the Proverbs address that, speak to that. Thus, our hope, of course, is in the future age, you know, as we pray often in the Lord's Prayer, thy kingdom come. That's where our hope is. We'll try to fix what we can in the present life, but because things are a mess and it's fallen and broken and sinful and flawed, a lot of the stuff we just have to put up with, as unfair as it is. And these Proverbs help us to come to grips with that. And finally, number 10, Proverbs are not universal. You want to use the right proverb for the right occasion. When we tell each other, look before you leap, what advice are we giving? You know? Slow down, be careful, you need to think about that. When we tell each other, he who hesitates is lost, what's our advice? You better move fast or you're going to miss the opportunity. The two sound like they contradict each other, but each of them have their own purpose. The circumstances dictate which one best applies. You don't apply every proverb to every situation, so it is you know, so it is with a lot of them here. A good example that most folks here would be familiar with would be in chapter 26. We have this passage, should be familiar to you. Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you will be like him yourself. Answer a fool according to his folly, or he will be wise in his own eyes. You know, we have two here back to back that appear to be contradictory, but we need to realize that there are two motivations involved. The first one, verse 4, is a warning to guard your own words. Be careful what you say, or you will end up being just like this other guy yourself. You'll end up being like that. Better to restrain yourself. This is especially true in those situations where after a few contentious exchanges, the goal is no longer on your part to help the other person understand, but rather just to win the argument and put him in his place, which is not healthy. You know, his belligerence stirs up belligerence in you. And that's what this proverb is warning about. Anyone ever got sucked in anything like that? Anyone ever been down on Webster Street years ago? Okay. You know, as other proverbs advise, you cannot reason with someone who is unreasonable. So this is a warning about that. The second one, verse 5, is to not let a fool's statement go unchallenged, lest he think that he is right. And you do him no service in that. And so out of concern for him, you should push back on it. And don't be so quick to just let things go. And, you know, quite frankly, Christians are guilty of this all the time. We let things go. We accommodate people's foolishness and lies and heresies and wrongheaded ideas. And we even accommodate their wickedness and vulgarities and blasphemies on the name of being loving. You know, I don't want to stir anything up. I don't want to turn them off. I just need to be affirming. Well, sometimes, oftentimes, the prudent thing to do out of love for him and love for God is to speak up. The point is, both of these proverbs have their place and both are valid, but not all situations are the same, and so discernment is called for. Again, circumstances dictate which one should, you know, which, you know, when one should speak and not speak and what to say or not say. All right. So let me close with the passage that I opened with, and I'll have John come and conclude the service. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. And basically, he says this is what they are for attaining wisdom and discipline, for understanding words of insight, for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life, doing what is right and just and fair, for giving prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. Let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance. For understanding proverbs and parables, the sayings and riddles of the wise. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. John?
Thank you, Wendell. I wish Wendell's parents were here today. I would say, hey, spank that child once in a while. Might be good for him. Excellent guidance there. In fact, I just had an idea I'm going to suggest to you. I'm planning to do this. Hadn't thought of it until a few minutes ago. I think what I'm going to do is work my way through the Psalms. What were you talking about? Were you talking about Psalms? Work my way through the Proverbs and chart each verse and what general principle is applies to that verse. And I think that'll really help me think through each of the Proverbs, each of the sayings, and I bet I'll get a lot more meaning out of it. And yeah, the Proverbs are wonderful to spend time in. So I'll challenge you to, or at least give that some thought as to whether that might be helpful. I think it would be. In closing, to those who, and I, you know, there was so much there that you shared with us, and but it's so broad that it's not like you went into depth in one particular area, because it is the Proverbs, and so that's about all I have to share about it. To those who are called, beloved in God the Father, and kept in Jesus Christ, may mercy, peace, and love be multiplied to you. And rather than just closing with that, I just want to comment to those who are called. That's all of us. Thank God for his calling us to, you know, we sang the song, The Power of the Cross. And, you know, wow, what a blessing that Christ took our wrath, or took God's wrath for us. Beloved in God the Father, and kept for Jesus Christ. You know, if you think of a, I'll just use the illustration of a young virgin who's being kept for her husband, for her future husband. You know, God has redeemed us. Let's live our lives in such a way that we are being kept for our relationship, our future personal relationship with Jesus Christ in the new heavens and the new earth. So in closing, may mercy, peace, and love be multiplied to you. You're dismissed.